Hello. It's an honor to be here, and I appreciate the organizers and the other panelists for taking their time to be here this morning. And what I'm going to present to you is exploratory. It's not meant to be provocative. It's meant to maybe approach tobacco control in a more critical way and also think more critically about changes going on in the global tobacco industry, using the leaf trade as a prism to understand changes in tobacco control and changes in the tobacco industry. And I'd like to begin by, you know, how I usually begin all my talks. One of the goals of the presentation is to get people here to feel how exciting it is to crush the tobacco companies. And I say that, you know, you can interpret that rhetorically or materially, but it's really something I really like to push because, you know, my job, and I think all of our jobs, is how to get young people excited about doing some really cool work within the field of tobacco control and also global trade issues. And so some people respond to that. And I think the challenge for me, and I think a lot of other people in tobacco control, is how do you, you know, after we pummel the tobacco companies with the dust that's there, how do we recreate something? So rather than just deconstruct or dismantle, you know, how do we really think about all the complexities that come up when we are successful and we crush the tobacco companies? Now, on one level, I don't really care about tobacco. What I want to do is try to create a model that can be applied to any kind of toxic commodity or toxic service. And so you're going to learn a lot about the leaf trade, but really I'm trying to figure out how to put together some concepts and different tools in our conceptual frameworks and our toolboxes that we use theoretically as also methodologically to figure out how to look at other industries like the pharmaceutical industry, big oil, uranium, which is one of the side projects I do because Malawi a couple years ago decided to diversify, so they're moving into uranium mining to reduce their dependency on tobacco. So I have some uranium work that I'm doing. I also want to emphasize that the work that I'm presenting and all of the work I've done so far, I never do it alone. I have a whole posse of people, whether my wife or colleagues in the Department of Anthropology and students at UC Denver here in Colorado. And I was also fortunate to spend 4 years in the Center for Tobacco Control Research and Education at UCSF. And Stan Glantz, a lot of the work that we did together, this is in the presentation. And it's some of it's in a manuscript submitted to a journal. So in my presentation, I'm going to have three vignettes. These are just like little case studies that are going to help to help with just rethinking or unthinking the current way that we're doing tobacco control, but also look at the industry and how it's raising some really serious challenges for us. So with these vignettes, I present them as a way to kind of get us to look at our own selves and what we do and the capacity that we have to actually do serious, engaged, and exciting social justice work. Okay. So basically, I have an approach to corporate social and ecological responsibility schemes that the industry, specifically leaf companies and cigarette manufacturers, what they engage in. And I try to reveal how, in some ways, they like to reveal certain things about what they do at the farm level. But they also do reveal certain things as a way to deflect public criticism or as a way to continue their access to low-cost or unpaid labor, whether it's child labor or the labor of adults. And I'm exploring with these two different sort of areas of theory or areas of methods, too, that I think are really exciting. And when I was listening to other presenters and thinking about how certain entities, whether it's the IMF or World Bank or WHO or even the tobacco companies, how they tend to appropriate really cool terminology, I kind of think in like 10 years you're going to see the industry use like discourse ecologies on their website. So in 10 years, let's talk to see if that actually happened. Oh, and full disclosure, I put down here, but I also like to see, are there any representatives of tobacco companies or their subsidiary organizations in the audience? If you can please raise your hand. Okay, so I'm going to try not to speak to the choir, because I think the presentation can be a little more interesting, and I'm going to also keep track of time and fly through this, because everyone else was so good about sticking to time. Okay, so here's something that just came up from Stanford University. If I got it right, an undergraduate put this together. And this, for me, is like indicative of one of the problems that we face as global public health and tobacco control people. This is an extraordinary resource to see visually the operations of cigarette manufacturers that produce leaf. However, and I emailed the guys, or people who put this together, the leaf processing companies, and there's at least 100 of them, I just haven't looked at my data in the last year or so, but the leaf processing companies are not on the map. And so this is a huge problem within tobacco control, and I think it's this grip of look at demand issues like smoke less, and look at advertising, smoke-free environments, which are all very critical and essential, but globally they're just half the problem in terms of who are the people that actually devote their lives to producing the leaf and are engaged in the discourses that we talk about in terms of tobacco control and trade. So exceptional resource, but I hope to see it updated to actually look at the leaf processing companies that are operated specifically by two U.S. companies, Universal Corporation and also Alliance One International. So here's something I just ripped off of Wikipedia, and I have the URL. It's a map that the green areas show where tobacco is cultivated. There's roughly 130 countries around the world, most of them in the developing world. And then you have you can see in Asia, it's just a massive producer and consumer of leaf. And then my emphasis historically has been mostly on Malawi, but I've been very, very fortunate to travel to Argentina and Jujuy, Argentina, Tanzania, and then also India to try to not spend time with health people or look at government officials or NGO people, but actually go to the farms and try to understand what are people dealing with. You know, how do they feel waking up hungry and going to bed hungry and producing tobacco for global companies? Okay, so this term, basically, it's sort of like standing back and looking at individual, family, state, regional, meso, macro levels in one gigantic entity and trying to understand what are the ways that there are, how are we constrained in terms of what we do? So I'm trying to look at all these different kinds of levels going on, specifically institutional settings like the tobacco industry, which involves cigarette manufacturers and leaf companies, policy-making circles, and also videography. I'm a professional filmmaker, and so there's this whole sort of set of practices and ideologies associated with videography, and how do you actually get people to critically read images about child labor, or how do you craft images without exoticizing poverty? And then also the whole method of ethnography, of actually talking to people and doing participant observation. And then also what I'm trying to do is how to look at anthropology, look at ethnography, and put them on the same playing field as these different practices of that tobacco companies and leaf companies engage in terms of their social responsibility practice, try to understand them and their complexities. And also to recognize that there's certain things that have, as I said before, some kind of grip over us. Efficiency, validity, economy, time pressure, all of these things play a role in terms of how we disseminate the knowledge that we have. And I'm really glad the previous speaker mentioned, you know, scientific evidence or evidence-based research. All that stuff is very valuable, but it's also a very Western concept. And I think that's something we don't spend a lot of time unpacking and critically recognizing that you can have a life history or an oral history of one person who has this incredible knowledge that could be just as valid to me as like an interview with 1,000 people. So I think standing back and looking at scientific evidence, evidence-based research is something important. Okay, so this morning I went to PMI's website. Now, they want you to believe that they care about sustainability, they care about people, and so, you know, whether or not people actually buy into this stuff, I don't know, because I haven't measured people's responses to this kind of stuff, but they spend a lot of money portraying themselves as environmentally sensitive and stewards of the environment, and so this is something I want to hit direct on with the concept called green authoritative knowledge, and this is something not just in the tobacco industry. You can see it in the World Bank, you can see it almost in any industry that exists. There's a set of practices or approaches to collecting data and presenting imagery that's green, and then all of a sudden the issues that are really valid and important are pushed to the background, and we get overwhelmed by, you know, sustainability, and I think this is something that is a huge problem and needs to be unpacked really well. And I think this whole idea of green and sustainability, it's part of this larger process of the way the world is turning, whether you want to call it corporate capitalism or you know, neoliberalism. There's certain ideologies and practices, whether it's free trade or deregulation, that I think are a huge problem in other countries that are part of this larger environment in which knowledge production and green knowledge is produced. Okay, LEAF. So basically, since the early 1990s, the tobacco companies, Philip Morris, BAT, and then LEAF buying companies in the 2000s figured out that they got to make their commodity chain more social and more recognizing that there's problems at the farm level. And so they took this idea of a value chain or commodity chain or supply chain, and then basically they figured out how to spin it and make it seem that everywhere there's any kind of human activity, whether it's on the farm, like mulching, or in the factory where they have battery-powered cars, that they now are green. So this has been going on for about 20 years. And then also, in terms of LEAF, the LEAF industry itself, they have multiple faces. There's a group called Total Land Care that's actually kind of like a front organization, and a couple years ago, it was hidden, the connection to Philip Morris and BAT, but now they've come a little more public. So this is actually an organization out of Washington State University Pullman, where there's multi-millions of dollars coming from tobacco companies to this NGO called Total Land Care that has about a half a dozen operations in developing countries, specifically Malawi and other places. And so using this kind of NGO in a university helps these LEAF companies and tobacco companies show that they're legitimate and that they should be a stakeholder or shareholder in all the different kind of discussions that we have, and also the way trade is discussed. So what I'm going to show in the next couple slides is that the amount of money that the industry, LEAF companies, and cigarette manufacturers actually spend to like improve the environment or reduce depletion of the soils or to improve water quality, the amount of money pales in comparison to the actual economic benefit that the tobacco industry gets through unpaid child labor and deforesting different developing countries. So I got 3 minutes to zip through this. Okay, so the vignette one looks at Malawi, Mozambique, Tanzania, and Zambia. That was a region of the world in southern Africa where I could pull together some data. So basically, the tobacco companies saved about $97 million a year by not having to cover the costs of child labor or deforestation in the environment, which is about $1.2 billion over 13 years. And this cost savings is 50 times the $22 million in CSER projects that they actually paid for, like schools and wells and all this stuff. And so the way I came to that is I put together this extremely, it's a real simple table, but I basically looked at the top 10 tobacco producing countries, excluding the other ones that are like, you know, China and North Korea that play a key role in the economy, but the data was hard to get. So these are developing countries trying to understand and quantify the cost of tobacco related deforestation. And I found this figure that roughly, if a tobacco, like a LEAF buying company that has a direct contract on a farm, if they chose not to destroy the environment, it would cost them about $40 a hectare. And so that's one of the measurements we use to quantify the amount of money cost savings to the tobacco industry. And also child labor. So I tried to calculate 14 years old and younger, how much the daily wage was and how much they actually would get paid if they were regular salaried workers. And so I tried to put together this figure to show, just to quantify and amplify the economic benefit to tobacco companies. The ITGA, these are just two quotes. Next week in Uruguay, the Conference of the Parties of the World Health Organization, they're going to meet and talk about different protocols of the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, which is the world's first treaty, a health treaty. So these are just two quotes. Public health people should get on a plane and travel to Malawi to explain to 700,000 families that they decided to make them grow potatoes instead of tobacco. So what the industry likes to do is misrepresent things. They think that the World Health Organization, through the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, is trying to ban tobacco production, which it's not. So this is sort of some PR and rhetoric that the industry use. And then, of course, the bottom there, you know, the industry likes to associate themselves with, the Millennium Development Goals, that poverty can be reduced through tobacco production, which if you look at Malawi, it's been growing tobacco for over 100 years. A lot of other developing countries have been growing tobacco. They're still poor, really, really poor, not benefiting much. A few people are, but not many. So the blueprint or the vignette number three, you know, what do we do? There's this major force in public, in global tobacco control and public health that we need to denormalize tobacco. I'm fully on board with that. We need to make it socially unacceptable. At the same time, I think this is a politically neutralizing kind of approach, and I think we need to integrate more, you know, social justice kinds of concepts and think about how to actually dismantle, do a class analysis, rethink or unthink neoliberalism and corporate capitalism. And then here's a couple other things. The very bottom, in the last, I think since the 60s, there's been no major conferences on the continent of Africa. So when you look at the World Conference for Tobacco and Health, there's been no conferences in Africa that are at the global level. And also World No Tobacco Day, which happens, I think, every May 31st, there's never been a theme that looked at agricultural issues or the people who actually devote their lives to tobacco production. I think in terms of opportunities, right now, there's this major momentum to reveal how the tobacco industry is being dragged across the courts, not only in the United States, but in other countries, where they actually try to, there's allegations of bribery. For example, $5 million in bribes paid to Malawi and other developing countries to secure contracts of tobacco sales. So this is something, it's an opportunity just to build on to show that the tobacco industry is actually in line with the mafia. And this needs to be, I think, publicized even more. And then this is something from the U.S. Philip Morris final proposed findings of fact. The tobacco industry has been engaged in executing, continue to engage in and execute a 50-year scheme to defraud the public. We need to look at alternative crops. And I think one of the things that have been successful is some of my research has been used to put Malawi on the list of countries that we don't import tobacco from because there's evidence to show that there's child labor embedded in that crop. So I think this is something we need to think about in other countries through evidence. And lastly, we need to rethink cigarette warning labels. So for too long, we have labels that bring it to the individual health, and like you shouldn't smoke, it's bad for your lung or your fetus or your impotence or whatever. So these kinds of, this is a prototype of cigarette warning labels that I think we can start to circulate to draw attention to some of the social and ecological and health costs of tobacco. And I have free movies because I'm a producer of films, and I really encourage people to think of their written work in visual terms to speak to a larger audience. So I have free DVDs up here, and thank you for your time.